Hello everyone and welcome to Module 10 of Advanced Aromatherapy, Therapeutic Application of Essential Oils for Clarity, Health, and Happiness with David Crowe, titled Essential Oils for Women's Health. This is your host, Colleen at the Shift Network. Just a couple reminders, if you did call into Maestro and you need any assistance, please press 5 on your telephone keypad. If you're on the webcast, please type directly into the message box and please include your email address so we can reply. That covers it for today. So let's bring on David and get started. David, welcome.
Thank you, Colleen, and welcome back to everybody. I would say that today is an excellent day to be studying and learning about the healing powers of medicinal plants to protect our body, our emotions, our mind, and our spirit. And so let's go ahead and get started. Let's do our normal routine. If you will please go to the course page, and you will see Module 9, Essential Oils for the Musculoskeletal System. We have a couple of things to finish from last week. So if you would please open the file titled Musculoskeletal Synergies and Formulas, just by clicking on that one. Musculoskeletal Synergies and Formulas. We're not going to open everything, just a couple of things. And the other one that we would like to finish would be the Pharmacopoeia for Module 9. So if you could also open the Pharmacopoeia for Module 9. And then we can go into the things that we'll be studying today. And we do have two modules dedicated to women's health and the use of essential oils and aromatherapy. And so for Module 10, if you could click on the link for Part 1, and you will see that there's a number of files. So you could click on the first one, Women's Health Therapeutics. Women's Health Therapeutics, and then click on the second one. And of course, these should just open in a separate tab on your browser. And then if you can click the next one, Women's Health Synergies and Formulas. The next one is Essential Oil Studies for Women's Health. The next one is Women's Health References, Modules 1 through 9. And the next one is Pharmacopoeia for Module 10. And the last one, webcast questions, and that is where we will start. Webcast questions. Wonderful questions came in. I'm going to go ahead and review a couple of these because some of these are really worth some further discussion, and they will also take us into completing Module 9. And I will also invite people to post any type of wonderful testimonial that you might have. I see a few really nice comments coming in on the webcast. Any questions or problems you might be having, you can post them on the webcast, and we can also take a couple of minutes for a little phone conversation before we get started. But first, let's just go through, as I always do, I'll just touch on a few of these in the file. The webcast questions from session 9 is what that file is called, and I'll just leave several of these for you to read at your own time. And one of the first ones I'd like to bring to your attention concerns birch and wintergreen essential oils. And the comment is, birch and wintergreen essential oils are extremely hepato- and nephrotoxic. They effectively poison the liver and kidneys. They are also neurotoxic and lead to seizures and even death. They're extremely effective for musculoskeletal pain, so people can get carried away. But there have been multiple documented issues of mostly athletes going over the top with products containing these oils and effectively poisoning their internal organs via the skin, along with at least one death of a 16-year-old student athlete. It's so important that people know this so they don't overdo wintergreen or birch oil and inadvertently poison themselves. My comment is, yes, please read the monographs. The vast majority of commercial products are from low-quality synthetic salicylates. And I think it's possible that a lot of the toxicity is from that. However, Even true botanical birch and wintergreen oils are high in salicylates and should be treated accordingly. Now, we're going to go back in a minute and we're going to review the monographs. I gave that to you in the last module as a deepening practice to become familiar with these oils, and you will see that that is clearly stated in these monographs, that these are toxic oils. They should not be used on children. They should not be used by pregnant women, and so forth. Now, I will also mention that in order to have toxicity, that people have to really use a lot over a longer period of time. These compounds, the salicylate compounds that are in these kind of liniments and rubs that are widely available all over the world, over the counter, are extensively used. And therefore, they do have some value and they do help people. But the problem comes when people use them excessively for an excessively long period of time. Now, there are certain oils that I am not a fan of, that you have heard about several times. One is peppermint oil. And wintergreen and birch oils I am also not a particular fan of because they have this potential toxicity. However, all essential oils have potential toxicity, as you know, and that is why we have to learn how to use them carefully. And if we do use these carefully in the proper dilution, then they will not hurt us and they will give us some benefit. And so wintergreen oil, birch oil, and synthetic salicylates are extensively used in lots of products, and they do give symptomatic relief. I don't believe that there's something that we could consider to be a really, what Chinese medicine would call a superior herb that can be taken for an extended period of time and just make us healthier and healthier. It is definitely a symptomatic, superficial, temporary treatment. And as long as we understand this and we know how to use it in highly diluted form, which is in your monograph, then we should be okay. Next question. This is one of the ongoing questions in the world of aromatherapy. Are Ravintsara and Ravintsara different essential oils? Yes, they are different essential oils. Another closely related question that came in is, can they be used interchangeably? And specifically, can they be used interchangeably for a sinus infection? And the answer is yes, they can be used somewhat interchangeably, but no, they are not entirely the same. Can you use the Ravintsara for steam inhalation for the sinuses? Yes. However, the Ravintsara is actually, in my opinion, a much more versatile essential oil that has a lot more benefit because of its antiviral properties. Okay, a few other things here. Let me scroll through. And good question here about restless leg syndrome. This is actually something that we're going to learn about in our module soon because it does affect mostly women, and it's good to know. Several questions along these lines have come in, actually, and there is a treatment plan that can be given. Massage and acupuncture are primary treatments for restless leg syndrome, and we'll find in our herbal, research studies coming shortly, that lavender is a good essential oil combined with massage that can help with restless leg syndrome. And I've also seen references to helichrysum and to chamomile, and I've also heard testimonials that helichrysum can be very, very effective. So those three, lavender, helichrysum, and chamomile, are all good essential oils to try in a carrier for application before bed. But keep in mind that this is also very nutritionally related, has a lot to do with magnesium and calcium and nutrients of other types, and herbal medicine is also very important. Let's see. There was a comment here about a headache being treated by a woman whose son had a high fever, terrible headache. She sat him in a chair in a bathtub, soaking his feet in a tub of water as hot as he could tolerate to draw the energy down. And very shortly, the pain was relieved. He relaxed, the fever broke, and he was able to sleep. Now, I actually misread this because I had heard this referred to, I had heard this particular home remedy treatment as being done with cold water, as cold as could be tolerated. And so I responded by saying, yes, foot soaks in cold water is an old folk remedy for headaches and sometimes very effective. Well, I think that just goes to show that maybe both could work. And most likely, it could be beneficial either way, I imagine. I mean, somebody, you know, a child with a high fever, it may help to heat the feet up and it may help to cool them down. I don't know that there's any real consistency. But thank you for pointing that out, that I made an error in my response here. Okay, let's see a few other things. I gave some links here for nausea applications, and those are the herbal products that can be injected one or two drops at a time into the sinuses, and I am suggesting this could be a helpful therapy for some of the people who have said that they have the opposite problem of not having a sense of smell, that they have a sense of smell that is highly acute and actually causes a lot of problems. And I did cover this a little bit last module, so I am just posting the links here. These are some things from Ayurvedic medicine that might be helpful. The basic idea is that if you put medicine in the sinuses, that it can cleanse and strengthen and balance the mucous membranes of the sinuses. And by doing that, that it can actually build up some resistance both at the respiratory level and at the immunological level and at the neurological level as well. So this is certainly not going to be harmful for anybody to try a couple drops, one or two drops in each nostril one or two times a day of these particular Ayurvedic preparations. You can give those a try and let me know if any of those seem helpful. All right, let's see. Everything else, I think I'll just leave for you to read through. Okay, here's another one that I'll touch on. Can you explain how a hot oil hydrosol like peppermint can be cooling when spray misted on the body on a hot day? Well, the answer here that I put is essential oils often have both heating and cooling effects depending on how they are used. And so, for example, peppermint creates a cooling sensation on the skin, but it can also create contact dermatitis. And hydrosols can also do the same thing, but just to a lesser degree. And of course, a hydrosol, if you mist it on yourself, it's going to feel cool because it's a mist. But certain types of hydrosols, for example, cinnamon, it might feel cool as a mist, but then it might start to heat the skin. So we see that there's a lot of paradoxical effects that come from essential oils like that. And that also includes, and this is another question that came, how can essential oils be both stimulating and relaxing at the same time? Well, that's just one of the basic things about how herbs work, because herbs are not just moving our physiology in one particular direction, okay? Herbs are never just 100% stimulant unless it's something that contains a high amount of caffeine. Herbs are very rarely 100% sedative. Most herbs are somewhere in between, and if you look at how they work, their basic overall function, then you can understand that things can be both warming and cooling at the same time. Like, for example, turmeric is considered to be a warming herb, and ginger is considered to be a heating herb. But at the same time, if you look at their post-digestive effect, that's one of the ways Ayurveda explains this. If you look at the post-digestive effect after we have digested the herb through all the different tissue levels, what is the end result? What is the net result? The net result is that it is anti-inflammatory in nature or cooling. And so therefore, we see these kind of paradoxes quite frequently where you chew on a ginger root and it feels quite hot and makes you sweat. And it's clearly classified in Ayurvedic and Chinese medicine as a heating herb, and yet the effect that it has in the tissues is that it is cooling, anti-inflammatory. So with the essential oils, we see the same thing. It's just that they work in slightly different ways because they're oils and we use them differently in different applications. But we could also see, for example, that something can be warming and stimulating and yet relaxing. A good example would be if we were to take a warming oil, such as, say, a little bit of ginger, and we put it in a massage oil because we have a musculoskeletal discomfort of a cold cuff of nature. Well, ginger is very warming and very stimulating, and therefore we would think, well, okay, I'm going to be totally energized from the ginger oil massage. But a lot of times, a warming massage oil will actually make a person feel very relaxed, and it will help to calm their nervous system. So this is a very good question, and this is just part of what we learn in terms of aromatherapy and herbal medicine, is that these plants are complex. They don't just do one thing. They do a lot of things, and they do different things for different people as well. Just to make it even more complicated, things are very idiosyncratic, as it were. And so therefore, when we talk about strengthening herbs like the adaptogens, like something like rhodiola, like maca, like American ginseng, ashwagandha, something like that, what we see is that they are used for people who are very exhausted, very tired, to give them energy. And yet, at the same time, if you look at their indications, we see that a lot of times that they actually help people sleep at the same time. And the reason for that is because a lot of times people have insomnia when they're deeply exhausted. You need energy to sleep. So these are complex physiological reasons why these things happen, but it's a very good question. I hope that gives a quick overview. Okay, a few other things were posted there on social media. Thank you for doing that. And now let's go ahead and open up the phone for a few minutes. Why don't we call in and see if anybody would like to call in if people are not too distracted with the political situation in the world these days. Maybe people are actually on the call today and they would like to call in with any comments, and otherwise we'll just go ahead and move on. So Colleen, you want to check on that?
Yes, just to remind everyone, please press 1 on your telephone keypad if you'd like to share with us. And there were a couple comments on the webcast. Do you want to save those for later for your document, or?
Why don't we give people just a moment to call in, and in the meantime, if you want to go ahead and read the second one there from Lee, that's a very nice comment, actually. If you want to go ahead and read through that, and I'll comment on it.
Okay. So Lee has shared with us from the webcast, "I've been losing my sense of smell gradually through the use of an asthma steroid inhaler. But I find the most effective oil or blend for restoring my sense of smell has been your forest blend that I first started using for my asthma and other respiratory problems. Then slowly I began to smell other essential oils, such as inuli and tulsi and rosemary and sandalwood and so forth. It really has been a substantial improvement. On some days when I can't smell anything, I go back to the forest blend again, which I can always smell, and my sense of smell returns. I just thought others might find this useful or interesting. Thank you, David Crow, for this wondrous improvement."
Excellent. You are most welcome, and thank you for the wonderful testimonial. And this is why I gave the comments that I did before, because I have heard these kind of testimonials in clinical practice, and so really nice to hear that you are having such good improvement. And for those who are interested in the ingredients, the forest blend is a combination of conifers and eucalyptus, and it also has a little bit of angelica root in it, so it has a stronger base note. But this indicates that oils that are helpful for clearing the respiratory system are good for improving the sense of smell. Okay, let's jump into our module. And what I would like to do here is to return to the file from last week. We touched on basics of musculoskeletal treatment in the file titled Musculoskeletal Synergies and Formulas. And if you would now turn to that file, which should be open on your computer, look for the tab Musculoskeletal Synergies and Formulas. And just to refresh people's memories, since we had a week off, this was a description of first carrier oils and salves. And I gave a list of several sources where you can find these, and that included arnica and calendula, St. John's wort, and so forth. And then a group of general musculoskeletal oils for sprains and strains, tendonitis, and so forth. And then symptom-specific oils, and gave several conditions, sprains, strains, bursitis, arthritis, back and neck aches, fibromyalgia, and so forth. And then mentioned which ones are good for direct palm inhalation, or direct application, I should say, including direct palm inhalation. And then gave some blending proportions that are based on fragrance intensity and dermotoxic potential, and then blending harmonies. Now, what I would like to do is take a moment and just add a few more recipes here for you to consider. And let me find my file to bring that up. Okay. So I'm just going to give you a few additional ways of blending some essential oils for some specific things. And I don't think I mentioned any of these last week, but it's okay to have a nice quick review here. So we're going to be moving into the module on women's health concerns, and some of these oils cross over when it comes to treating cramping and pain. Some of the oils that are used for musculoskeletal pains are also used for menstrual cramps and for restless leg syndrome and so forth. And so here's a formula. The basic formula is clary sage, which is a major women's oil we're going to study today. Clary sage and peppermint and lavender is a frequently seen type of combination. Now, what would you like to do in terms of mixing it? Well, I think the clary sage and lavender go together nicely, about half and half, and that peppermint should be brought down to about one quarter of that. So what I would say then is 4 parts of clary sage, 4 parts of lavender, and 1 to 2 parts of peppermint. Now, what would you like to do with this? Well, you put it in a carrier oil. You could go to 5% dilution. You could go to 10% dilution. Because the peppermint oil is relatively low, and you could just massage that on the abdomen for menstrual cramps. Then a recipe here quickly for leg cramps. You would like to think more of the warming oils. So you could think about the black pepper and the ginger. And those are good in general for all kinds of musculoskeletal problems that are more of a cold nature or more of a vata nature, which means contraction and tightness. So warming is a really good principle. And so you could use why don't we make a little blend here? We could say the black pepper maybe 2 parts and the ginger maybe 3 parts. And then we could add the clary sage and lavender again, and we could actually put in 4 parts of each of those. So that would be a nice formula, again, for massaging on the legs, for cramping and tension. And it doesn't have to be just the legs, that would be a good reason to use them. So basically any kind of muscle cramp, you could use that on your neck and shoulders as well. It would be good. So let's look at a couple more things here. We have some recipes for sprains and strains and tendonitis, and I've already given you the primary symptomatic oils that you want to think about. We can just go ahead and look at that file again together, and that's going to show us that the primary essential oils for sprains and strains and tendonitis are going to be things like juniper and marjoram and clove and ginger again and grapefruit. So we're seeing that ginger is actually used quite a bit in the musculoskeletal department, but we could also use some things that are cooling and anti-inflammatory, such as lavender again. Let's not forget that lavender is actually very good for pain, and chamomile is a very good essential oil for spasms as well, and helichrysum, which we're going to explore here in the monograph in just a moment. So what could we do with this? Well, actually, lavender and helichrysum and chamomile all blend together very nicely, and you don't have to be so concerned about the proportions here, except from the standpoint of the fragrance intensity and maybe the cost of some of these oils, like the helichrysum is very expensive. So you could use, say, two parts of the lavender and one part each of the helichrysum and the chamomile. And something like an arnica herbal oil or one of the salves that I mentioned, the willow bud, that would be the cottonwood. That kind of recipe could go very nicely in that. And if you're not catching this first time around, don't worry about it, because it's going to be there in the audio and it's also going to be there in the transcripts. And so you can just go back and review that. And you already have the basic outline, and I'm just giving you a few further details. You have the bigger picture of what oils to use. You already know the different methods. You already know that for sprains and strains, for applying the oils for those kind of conditions, that basically you're going to want to put it into a salve, a carrier oil. You could also use a simple blend like that we just talked about, a few drops in a bath actually would be okay. But a carrier oil or a salve applied directly on the area would actually be better. So then we could also talk about a little inflammation of the bursa, the bursitis, and I gave you also the primary oils for that. And for this, you would also consider direct application of some oils. The helichrysum oil directly is quite safe for the skin, as you will soon learn. And this is a major oil that you will like to reach for all kinds of conditions, all kinds of musculoskeletal conditions. It's one of the most important, as we will talk about here in just a moment. And so you can put helichrysum directly on bursitis, on arthritis, tendonitis, any type of itis. Basically, helichrysum is going to be very good for, and chamomile is also going to be good for that as well. But for bursitis, you could also think about the carriers, such as the infused arnica oil, the St. John's wort oil, the cottonwood oil again, or cottonwood salve, I mean. And you can basically mix any of those oils from the primary herb group. And then you could also consider, remember that eucalyptus is very helpful for musculoskeletal conditions as well, and so you might want to do something that is just pure eucalyptus in a cottonwood salve, for example. This could be very, very helpful. All right, so we have so many further details, but I think that we're just going to go ahead and wrap this up. And this particular file that I'm looking at, and let's go to the monographs from last week, which will give us even more ideas of blends and applications. And we should learn some specific things about birch and wintergreen, and let's go ahead and review. So if you would open the file titled Pharmacopoeia Module 9, Pharmacopoeia Module 9, then you will see right at the top of that page, if you click on the link, it's going to open as a PDF file in a new tab, and then you will see that we have the monographs, which hopefully you had some time to read: birch, helichrysum, common juniper, marjoram, and wintergreen. Let's go ahead and read through first what I consider to be by far the most important, and that is helichrysum. So if you just click on that link, it will just take you right to that monograph there. And so you'll learn that helichrysum is a genus. It has 600 species, over 600 species. And they grow all over the world, and the name comes from the combination of the Greek helios, that means a sun, and the chrysum, meaning gold. And that's because most of the helichrysum flowers are gold or white or yellow or something like that. This is a herb that comes from the Mediterranean region. I have had a lot of adventures with Sarah in places where helichrysum grows, specifically the island of Corsica, which is renowned for its production of both the wild and the cultivated helichrysum that is so famous. And the Helichrysum italicum is the specific species, but what's very interesting is that the Helichrysum italicum also grows in other countries, other parts of the Mediterranean, and yet it does not have anywhere near the same healing powers that the Corsican Helichrysum essential oil does, and that's because of its ecological factors. Specifically, the soil is attributed to giving the Corsican helichrysum its unique healing powers. So these are things that we look at when we go into a lot more detail about the essential oils. And there is quite a bit of chemistry that's here in this particular monograph here. But the most important thing, therapeutic actions and benefits, it's highly rich in constituents such as nerylacetate, and so forth. And nerylacetate in the essential oil industry is the primary marker that they're looking for, and that's the one that's particularly high in the Corsican helichrysum, which is why the Corsican helichrysum is almost impossible to get, because it's in such demand and it is produced in a very limited amount, which is why it's so expensive. So the research, which has been going on fairly extensively now for the last 10 or 20 years into this essential oil, shows that it is analgesic, anti-inflammatory, antiseptic, antispasmodic, antidepressant, and antifungal. It's highly revered. It's thought of very highly as an excellent wound healing essential oil. And I would back that up, and I would say that I would rank helichrysum essential oil at the top of the list of all healing essential oils. One of the things that's very interesting about the essential oil of helichrysum is that it almost always does what its reputation says it will do, and that is unique in the world of aromatherapy. I've touched on this in previous modules, and I've said, well, how do we know that these things actually do these things? Because sometimes they do not, and they frequently do not do what we want them to do if their effect is based on the pleasure sensation through the olfactory limbic system. And therefore, aromatherapy is highly subjective for a lot of people. The effects are not things that we can actually pin down. We can't just say, well, rose oil is antidepressant for everybody, because some people may have an unpleasant emotional memory with the scent of rose, and they may not even like it, and so it won't do something. But helichrysum is unique in that it gives repeatable, predictable effects for specifically wound healing, soft tissue injuries, scar tissue, and skin protection. So if we look here, it is also good for respiratory infections, and it's one of its primary properties is that it has potent effects in skin conditions, promoting wound healing and skin health. It's also very good for muscle and joint pain and relieving local pain and spasm. It's very calming also for the nervous system. Now, if we scroll down a little bit further, how do we use this? It can be applied either undiluted or diluted. Most people dilute it because it's so expensive, and it's still very effective. But this is an oil that is very safe to apply directly. Now, some people, a small number of people, have reported that they get contact dermatitis from helichrysum essential oil or helichrysum hydrosol. And I think that this is a unique thing that happens in a tiny percentage of people. So I would advise, as always, if you are planning on using an essential oil in a more concentrated form on the skin, do a little patch test first. However, this is a very rare reaction, and helichrysum is actually very good for the skin, and so I think you can feel quite safe about applying it, but don't apply a whole lot on a large area without testing it. So what else is here? It supports the healing of skin wounds, burns, and reduces scarring. I would suggest that for scar tissue, that a very simple combination is half and half helichrysum essential oil, and that is the helichrysum metallicum, half and half helichrysum essential oil and frankincense essential oil, because frankincense also has excellent wound healing properties, and both of those have low dermotoxic potential, so you can actually make a blend half and half, and then you can just apply that directly to the skin in smaller amounts, testing it first. Now, for scar tissue, what I have seen is that this has excellent benefits for reducing scar tissue. Some of you have heard me give these teachings over the years, and you may have a testimonial that you might like to mention. Many of you are already familiar with helichrysum and frankincense combination for a lot of things, and have used helichrysum. It's a very popular oil. A lot of people have used it, and I always take the time to talk about it over and over again because it is one of the most important oils, in my opinion. It is also extremely beneficial for soft tissue injuries where you have pain, swelling, and bruising. That's why we include it in the musculoskeletal file. The way that it works is that it actually enhances the circulation of blood in the capillary beds. And that's also how it helps to protect the skin, to rejuvenate the skin, protect it from premature aging, to help with the scar tissue. Everything that helichrysum does has been found to be related to this power that it has in the capillary circulation, which is basically that it improves capillary circulation where it is blocked. And so if you have a soft tissue injury like a sprained ankle, you're going to get swelling and edema and a big hematoma, and it's stagnation. It's blood stagnation with fluid accumulation. And that's the body's attempt to protect the area, to keep it from getting injured again. But frequently when the body responds to things, it does not respond in the most efficient way. And this is a good example, because really what you want is you don't want a lot of stagnation. You want movement. And at the same time, you don't want to just go in and start doing deep tissue massage on something that's injured. So if you apply the helichrysum essential oil over a bruise with swelling and edema and pain and inflammation and so forth, what it's going to do is it's going to very gently move the blood through the capillary beds, and what that's going to do is carry away the toxins from the injury, the blood stagnation, and help to move in fresh oxygen and fresh blood. That's a good way to think about the powers of helichrysum. So really, we would say that it is a blood vitalizing herb in Chinese medical terms. Now, because helichrysum is such a good skin rejuvenative, we can also jump ahead to our future module on skincare. We can see that another very important essential oil along these lines is going to be carrot seed. And so there's a little recipe here for you, skin regenerative blend, which is 12 drops of helichrysum and 6 drops of carrot seed. But then you want to put that in a carrier oil for sure, something that's going to be really good for your skin, because the carrot seed oil can be a little overstimulating and heating and irritant to the skin if you put it on directly. And so you would like to put these drops into a half an ounce of carrier oil, and I recommend the rosehip seed oil. So healthy inflammatory response, you see that helichrysum and chamomile go nicely together. All right, let's go ahead and finish that up. So now you have a good idea about helichrysum. Now let's touch on the birch and the wintergreen. If you could scroll back up to the top of the page, where you see the links again, and then click on the birch. Now, the way that we can, we don't have to cover both of these separately because they're both very, very similar, but birch is the oil that is distilled from the birch tree, and the wintergreen is distilled from the wintergreen leaves. The wintergreen leaves are mostly distilled in the Himalayas, in Nepal specifically, and the birch has historically been distilled in places like Canada. Now, the oils smell very similar, and their chemistry is almost identical, and both of their chromatographs would show you that the primary compound, sometimes well over 90% of the oil, is one compound, which is methyl salicylate. And this is what gives wintergreen its typical wintergreen fragrance. Now, as I mentioned, methyl salicylates are widely synthesized. As a matter of fact, the essential oil of birch is actually quite rare on the market. The wintergreen oil is a little bit more common, but the vast majority of over-the-counter products that are used by athletes and that you find in products that a chiropractor might rub on you before giving you an adjustment, or that you might find in a plaster, a poultice, a salve, an ointment, a liniment, something like that, spicy, cool type of preparations, those are going to be made with low-grade methyl salicylate, synthetic compounds. I believe that's really where a lot of the toxicity is, but methyl salicylates are not safe either. And so these essential oils should be treated with a lot of respect. That's why we are reviewing this. Let's look at the actions and benefits. These are both analgesic and anti-inflammatory, and they are very effective in helping musculoskeletal pain. They are what you would call a rubefacient, which is means you put it on and it has a heating effect. This is something to be aware of. Do not put these oils on undiluted, ever. They will burn the skin, and they're highly toxic if they're absorbed into the skin. So you must use very, very low concentration levels, but it's very soothing to the pain, and it relieves inflammation, stimulates the peripheral circulation. That's what a rubefacient means. And so these are famous essential oils, famous compounds, and closely related in a certain way to the salicylic compounds that put it in the family of herbal medicines that are chemically somewhat closely related to aspirin in terms of being able to have an anti-inflammatory type of effect. Now, you're going to see here the list of therapeutic actions. It's quite long, including respiratory, clears the airways and sinuses, decongests, and all of that if you're going to put it in the diffuser. Now, I list this information here because the uses of these oils are very extensive, and people do use these for a lot of other kinds of things. These oils are considered to be anti-inflammatory tonics for the immune system, that are calming for the nervous system, that are refreshing for the mind and all of that. But I do not advise doing that. Even though I'm putting this list here, I advise that you focus only on musculoskeletal, relieves joint and muscular pain, soothes sore muscles, helps in osteoarthritis and rheumatic arthritis, reduces muscle and joint inflammation, treats stiffness, enables mobility. Just use these two oils only for musculoskeletal conditions. And then look at the next paragraph. Birch and wintergreen oils are toxic. And so this is there stated, and thank you to the person who wrote in that, yes, they are toxic. Avoid use throughout pregnancy and breastfeeding. Do not use these oils on infants, on damaged skin, or with people who are on salicylate-based medications, or on blood thinners. So this is a high warning essential oil because of its toxicity. What do you want to do? Well, if you're using those kind of over-the-counter products and you find that they're helping you, my suggestion is, well, you could switch over to a natural essential oil and then use it in very, very low concentration. And so how to use it? Scroll down a little bit more. Add one drop in a carrier oil. Okay, it doesn't say specifically how much carrier oil, but I would say for these oils, you want to keep them at about 0.5%. So that's really that's very, very low. That's 3 drops in an ounce, okay? Even less is okay. These are very concentrated. You're going to get good results. And just to be on the safe side in terms of the toxicity, use very, very low concentrations. All right. Now, if you will scroll back up to the top of the page, there's one more essential oil here that I just want to mention very briefly, and that is the marjoram. So if you scroll to the top and then click on the marjoram link, it will take you instantaneously through the file. And a few things that I would like to bring to your attention here, that marjoram is chemically very rich, and it gives the oil a lot of very important qualities that make it a major oil for musculoskeletal conditions. And it's analgesic, antispasmodic, antiseptic, antiviral, and so forth. This one you can use safely for many, many systems, okay? The birch and the wintergreen, not a safe oil. Used very specifically for musculoskeletal, rarely, highly diluted. But the marjoram, you'll see, works very nicely on many, many systems. It is really a much more beneficent, safer herb and essential oil to work with. The key point that we're looking at here, marjoram essential oil has an affinity for the musculoskeletal and circulatory systems, where it's soothing, relieves pain, enhances peripheral circulation, promotes muscle and joint health. It's also relaxing to the nervous system. So if you look at the list of specific therapeutic actions, it does stimulate peripheral circulation, protective to the blood vessels, through its antioxidant powers. This is how a lot of these aromatic plants work. High in antioxidant compounds, which protect from free radical damage. They protect the tissues and the cells from free radical damage. For the musculoskeletal purposes, you will see that it relieves joint and muscle pain, soothes sore muscles, helps in stiffness and pain of the joints, helps in arthritis, and promotes general musculoskeletal health. But you'll see that it's also good for the immune system, the respiratory system, the nervous system, and so forth. So if we scroll down, let's look here. Well, you have a recipe that's a gentle lung support formula, and you can see the marjoram can be blended with eucalyptus and pine for your diffuser for the respiratory system. So this does cross over very nicely in terms of its therapeutic effects. All right, let's close this file, and now let's go ahead and move on. We are now complete with the musculoskeletal. So now we have several files that are open, Women's Health Therapeutics and Women's Health Synergies and Formulas and Essential Oil Studies and Women's Health References from the various modules and our monographs. Okay, so now we can open up a new topic, and this topic is aromatherapy for women's health issues. And the primary things that we're going to touch on, we're going to break this into two major categories as we go through these two modules. One will be specifically for premenstrual tension, specifically for dysmenorrhea, and specifically for menopausal symptoms. But we will also look at some associated types of symptoms that happen, especially around menopause. Insomnia can become a problem, and restless leg syndrome, many other kinds of symptoms can arise, and so we can link back to those. Now, I'll start by saying a few words here about the relationship between essential oils and the female hormonal system specifically. One of the things that I have found very interesting, and for those of you who remember back to Module 3 in this course, you will remember that I classified essential oils according to botanical groups. Now, you don't have to jump around on the file here. I will just go ahead and pull that up and tell you specifically. But that was in Module 3, and that was in a file titled Botanical Therapeutic Categories. And in that particular file, you will remember, I'll just refresh your memory here, I gave two classifications of flower oils. One was medicinal flowers, And I gave a list of chamomile and clary sage and geranium and helichrysum and lavender and rhododendron. And then I also mentioned that there were exotic flowers like jasmine and rose and neroli and so forth. So that was the first overview where we looked at the botanical classification of essential oils. But then in another file that came right after that, the primary functions of those therapeutic categories, you will remember that I mentioned that the medicinal flowers are relaxing to the mood and the mind. They have anti-anxiety powers. They're calming to the nervous system. They're uplifting and antidepressant. They're cooling and anti-inflammatory. They support female hormonal balance. They have low dermotoxic potential. They're beneficial for the skin and they're anti-infectious. Now, that was for all the flowers, and specifically the medicinal flowers. But I also mentioned that for the exotic flowers, there was quite a bit of crossover. Same overall properties, but they were stronger mood uplifting and antidepressant effects, stronger relaxant anxiolytic effects, stronger sensual aphrodisiac effects, and stronger effects on the female hormonal balance. Now, why am I telling you this? Because the flowers are going to be one of the primary therapeutic groups of oils that we are going to be applying for female hormonal imbalances specifically, and as an adjunct to numerous other kinds of women's health concerns. Why is it that flowers have this biological relationship to the female hormonal system, and specifically to the female reproductive system? This is an interesting example of biological unity, of how we are connected to the plants, how we are also, from the evolutionary standpoint, a reflection of the plants. Because let's keep in mind that we came out of the plant world, and all the functions of the plants are actually inside the human body as well. And that is how medicinal plants work for us, work to help us, is that we are using the compounds that they use for themselves. That's a definition of herbal medicine. We are using compounds extracted from plants that they produce for their own purpose. Now, the thing that's important to remember about the flowers and why flower oils are so important and so fundamental for treating women's health conditions is that these essential oils are actually produced on a biorhythmic basis. Now, that's very different than oils that are produced, say, in the roots of plants, especially trees, or in the heartwood of trees, because those oils take decades to form. In other words, if you were to pull up a root of a sandalwood tree or a root of a cedar tree, those roots would be very rich in essential oil. And that essential oil would be the accumulated, distilled immunological power of the tree that has built up day by day, decade by decade, for a long period of time. And so many times, with a really old tree, the essential oil will have been in that tree for centuries, literally. And that represents something. It represents a kind of effect that has on our body and our mind. We frequently see those essential oils in species like Palo Santo and frankincense and sandalwood and agarwood and things like that, that take a very long time to develop and have a profound effect on our consciousness that we could say is a kind of spiritual wisdom from distilled time. Now, the flowers are at the opposite spectrum. The flower oils are produced in a biorhythmic way. So first, biorhythm is the seasonal cycle, and we can use rose oil as a good example, but all flowers follow this in different ways. So the roses blossom in the springtime. That's the first biorhythm. but then very specifically, they produce their essential oil at a certain time of day, which is time that is described in the Vedas as Brahma Muhurta, God's favorite time. This is the time when darkness is becoming light. In other words, it's the flowers start to produce their oil starting about 3 or 4 in the morning, and that production of essential oils goes on through the arrival of the sun, through all of the different stages of daybreak. And then when the sun is starting to rise above and starting to heat things up, then the flowers stop producing the essential oils. And that's why the roses are always harvested early in the morning. Now we can see that this particular cycle happens with lots of different flowers. Neroli happens during the midday sun. In other words, it needs a lot of sunlight and heat for the orange blossom to be full of oil. They don't pluck the oil at the middle of the night. However, the night blooming jasmine blooms around midnight, of course, and that's when it has the highest concentration of essential oils. The teaching from this is that the essential oils from flowers are actually the representation of the floral biorhythms. Let's consider that for a minute. We have essential oil that is produced on a biorhythmic basis. In other words, a flower is distilled at a specific time of day, therefore that oil represents a biorhythm of that flower. Now if we think about that and we take all of these different flower oils that I have mentioned in the botanical groups of medicinal flowers and exotic flowers, we see that they are all the expression of a biorhythm. Let's consider what happens when we breathe the essential oil that is produced by a flower's biorhythm. Well, the flower has produced that aroma compound for a specific purpose. It is a biorhythmic signaling mechanism. And if we breathe in that molecule that was produced by that flower, it is going to have a parallel effect in our system. And where specifically is that going to happen? It's going to happen in our limbic system. The flower oils work primarily through the limbic system, which we will unpack in quite a bit of detail in a future module. But I'm just giving you the overview here of the relationship between the female system and the use of these particular oils, which are used widely for women's health concerns. The mechanism is that the flower's pulsating biorhythmic nature produces the oil, which then has a direct effect through the limbic system on our own biorhythm. And if you stop to think about it, the issues that I have mentioned that we will talk about are biorhythmic in nature for women. Premenstrual tension. This is a biorhythmic issue. And so if you take the oil from a pulsating flower and you breathe it into your brain, into the limbic system, which controls the human biorhythmic cycles, what's going to happen is that it's going to have a rebalancing effect on your circadian rhythms. All right. I hope you found that all very interesting. I find it a very interesting topic to think about the relationship between what the flowers are doing and how they can affect our sleep, how they could affect women's menstrual cycle, how they could affect the symptoms of menopause, how they could affect the waking and sleeping cycles that are disturbed by menstrual tension or menopause, and so forth. Okay, now let's go ahead and look at some files now that I have given you that big overview just to get started here. Let's open the file that is titled, why don't we go ahead and look at the file that has to do with the studies, the scientific studies. Let's open the file titled Essential Oil Studies for Women's Health. So some of you, I know, really appreciate running through these. And so now if you will open up that particular page, you'll see that the first category is PMF. Why do we read these studies? Or I should say, why do I give you the abbreviated version of these studies? Because aromatherapy can be very subjective, and aromatherapy can also be overly hyped. As we know, in marketing, there's a tremendous amount of statements that are being made about all of these oils are going to do all of these things. I think it is always wise to just slow down and consider what is actually being done in a controlled study. And this is why I have presented this information to you. I don't normally present these types of studies in other classes, but I have found that keeping up to date with modern scientific research is very, very helpful in the aromatherapy world because it will do two things. You already know. You've already seen the kind of studies. First, it confirms certain things. It will confirm that certain oils will actually do this. But at the same time, we have to be very open-minded and accept the possibility that a study may tell us, no, it doesn't do this, and sometimes that happens. And when a study says, no, it doesn't really do it, or a study asks a question, was it the aromatherapy or was it the massage that gave the symptoms, that relieved the symptoms? We must ask a scientific question. Otherwise, we are going on hearsay and we are going to lose the effectiveness of knowing what oil really works specifically for what. So I look at three sources, as I have mentioned. Historical use is very, very important. And then the modern empirical clinical stuff that's coming out is very important. And then the scientific research is also very important. Let's go ahead, scan through. I've given you a good introduction now for this particular file. So we'll do this quickly, and then we'll move into the details of the oils. And so the first group of studies are about herbs and essential oils, because I believe that we can get a lot of benefit by looking at what herbs are being studied, because if an herb will do something in a study, there's a very high likelihood that the essential oil from that herb will do the same thing, and that is the case in this first study, titled Effective Treatment with Ginger on the Severity of Premenstrual Syndrome Symptoms. All right. So, getting of this module, I suggested ginger for cramping of the muscles. Well, here is ginger as an herb being taken internally. You can see the details here. 2 ginger capsules daily for 7 days before menstruation to 3 days after menstruation for 3 cycles. So this is taking ginger capsules internally, specific dose for a specific period of time for testing against the severity of PMS. And what are the results? After 1, 2, and 3 months of treatment, there was a significant difference between the two groups. Based on the results of the study, maybe ginger is effective in the reduction of severity of mood and physical behavior symptoms of PMS. And we suggest ginger as a treatment for PMS. Very good. Something as simple as ginger for PMS. Now, let's translate that into aromatherapy terms. This test, people were taking capsules of ginger for PMS, but how about doing a couple of drops of ginger in a carrier oil for abdominal massage for PMS? Most likely, it would also be very beneficial. And here is another specific home remedy using ginger that comes from macrobiotic system of healing, and that is you take a fresh ginger root, and you put it in your blender with some water, and you puree it up, and you apply it to the abdomen, and then you cover it with a piece of plastic, and you heat it with a hot water bottle or a heating pad. And this will start to warm the skin, it will improve the circulation of the abdomen, it will start to drive the essential oil in. This is using the whole herb for its essential oil content, all right? Similar concept as we talked about with treating the digestive system with the whole herb. So therefore, if you use the whole ginger poultice, it's going to have a relaxing effect on the upper GI tract for spasms. It's going to have a relaxing effect for uterine cramping. Let's go ahead and look at another herb that is used in a similar kind of study, and that is curcumin. attenuates or reduces the severity of premenstrual symptoms. So here's another very famous herb, turmeric. What do they say about this particular study? Same type, maybe it was even the same group of people. 2 capsules daily for 7 days before menstruation and for 3 days after menstruation for 3 successive cycles. What is the result? Our results for the first time showed a potential advantageous effect of curcumin in attenuating severity of PMS symptoms. And then they go on to describe that it's probably from modulating the neurotransmitters and the anti-inflammatory effects of curcumin. This is very good to know. What does that have to do with our aromatherapy and essential oils? Nothing specifically, except that we can also consider using turmeric externally for relieving pain and helping with premenstrual symptoms. Okay, now we're looking at a study. Does lavender aromatherapy alleviate premenstrual emotional symptoms? That's a good question. Now we're looking specifically at the use of lavender essential oil. And so we see the results, which look pretty promising. Only a 10-minute inhalation of the lavender scent significantly increased the high-frequency power reflecting parasympathetic nervous system activity in comparison with just water. So, in other words, inhaling lavender oil, I'll just translate this for you, inhaling lavender for 10 minutes significantly activated the parasympathetic nervous system. That means that it produced a relaxing effect. So, if we follow a little bit further, it means that these tests revealed that the inhalation of lavender oil significantly decreased the feelings of depression and dejection and confusion, common premenstrual symptoms, quote unquote, as long as 35 minutes after the aroma stimulation. Now, that is very important information, because now it's narrowing it down, and it's saying in order to give significant parasympathetic stimulation that's going to help relieve these moods of depression and confusion, you need to inhale lavender for 10 minutes. That is going to last about a half an hour. Okay. Well, it's very interesting because a lot of diffusers actually work on a timer. They run for 5 or 10 minutes, and then they go off for a half an hour. I think that that's a very helpful thing because it means that every half hour you're going to get a new dose of fresh lavender scent in your room. And this might be one of the ways that the lavender can keep you in a much more comfortable emotional state all day long. All right. So this study ends by saying that this effect is attributable to improvement of the parasympathetic nervous system. Okay, let's look at another one here. And this is yuzu. Okay, this is a citrus type of fruit. It is a citrus fruit, Japanese citrus. The aromatic effects on psycho-emotional states and autonomic nervous system activity during the menstrual cycle. So this is a little bit different of a study. This is not so much for PMS. This is really for the overall system during the cycle. Again, only a 10-minute inhalation of this citrus scent significantly decreased the heart rate, increased the parasympathetic activity, regardless of the menstrual phase. So that means that you're going to get good parasympathetic activity, which is translated into relaxation phase, as opposed to the sympathetic stimulation, which is the fight or flight adrenal exhaustion phase. And again, this significant physiological effect continued for at least 25 minutes. And this significantly decreased mood disturbance. All right, now if we continue on, we're going to see the next major topic here for women's health, dysmenorrhea. In other words, uncomfortable, painful, cramping with the flow of the period. What does aromatherapy have to do with dysmenorrhea? Let's see what the science tells us. The effect of self-aromatherapy massage on the abdomen on primary dysmenorrhea. Well, right away, we're going to see that there's going to be a little confusion because it's aromatherapy massage. And the question will come up, Are the symptoms alleviated because of the aromatherapy, or are they alleviated because of the massage? In this particular study, it was done very nicely with rose oil. The baseline pain reduced in the first cycle, but this reduction was not significant. In the second cycle, the menstrual pain was significantly lower in the rose oil group. That's important to know. What that tells us is that if you get an aromatherapy massage before your first period, if you have dysmenorrhea, it's going to take more than one cycle for aromatherapy massage to work. That's what we take away from this particular study, that you should have aromatherapy massage for several months, and the benefits will become cumulative. So what is the conclusion? Massage with aromatherapy reduces the severity of primary dysmenorrhea in comparison with massage therapy alone. All right, good conclusion. There's several more of these studies, but because of time, I'm just going to go ahead and leave these for you to read, but they're very promising. There's another aromatherapy massage on the abdomen for menstrual pain in high school girls. The next one will be the effect of cinnamon on menstrual bleeding and systemic symptoms with primary dysmenorrhea. Again, taking an herb, but we can also assume that we could use a aromatherapy abdominal massage with a little bit of cinnamon oil. Little bit is the key, and it's probably going to have a very similar effect as the herb itself. Next one. Scrolling down. Next one, pain relief by aromatic essential oil massage on outpatients with primary dysmenorrhea. Another study. Results significantly decreased. Okay, so we're learning then that aromatherapy, especially when combined with massage, can be very helpful for menstrual cramps. Right? And so this goes on, another study for nursing students, and another study on more students, and now we come to menopause. Now, this is more complicated because there are more symptoms that are being addressed. And so in this one, the first study, it's neroli, the orange blossom oil, looking at menopausal symptoms, stress, and estrogen in postmenopausal women. And I'll just let you read through this. But these findings indicate that inhalation of neroli oil helps relieve menopausal symptoms, increase sexual desire, and reduce blood pressure in postmenopausal women. And blood pressure can definitely be a big issue in postmenopausal women. So inhalation of orange blossom oil appears to be very promising. And this is basically just inhalation. It's nothing else. That gives us something substantial to consider. Then another one, aromatherapy massage for menopausal symptoms. Again, good results. Insomnia and blood pressure, all right? So this is the last category here. Insomnia, blood pressure, there's a whole bunch of different things. And these are all related to women's health concerns. And then the last section here, a comparison of lavender and clary sage oil. Now, I have introduced the bigger topic of using the flower oils as one of the primary groups of oils for women's health concerns. And we're going to see over and over, lavender, clary sage, lavender, clary sage. But this study looks at it. It's very specific. It's for urinary incontinence undergoing urodynamic examination. All right, a very specific type of thing, but the results are very interesting. It says that lavender oil inhalation may be inappropriate in lowering stress during these examinations, despite its anti-stress effects, while clary sage oil inhalation may be useful in inducing relaxation. Well, what that tells me is that lavender is not as strong in creating a relaxation effect as clary sage. And I already knew that. Clary sage is significantly more powerful for inducing relaxation than lavender is. Lavender is still relaxing, but lavender also for some people can have a paradoxical stimulant type of effect. That's why these studies are so helpful to really understand, well, what do they actually do physiologically? Well, it turns out that lavender has a relaxing effect. It's also really good for sharpening your alertness to help you study. Clary Sage, on the other hand, is deeply relaxing that can help put you to sleep. So therefore, this study comparing these two oils is potentially very helpful in looking at our various recipes and so forth. Now, that concludes the Essential Oil Studies for Women's Health introduction. Let's look now at the file titled Women's Health Therapeutics. And again, we come to these large groups of oils with general therapeutic effects, and these are oils that are frequently found in many kinds of formulas. This is just your basic working palette. This is just to help you understand over and over and over again certain therapeutic functions of essential oils. And you've already seen some of these. Here's analgesic group. You've already seen this for the musculoskeletal. Here's a new one, antidepressant oils. Well, antidepressant oils are very effective in premenstrual tension and menopausal depression and so forth. Antidepressant oils include basils, bergamot specifically, but citruses in general. And here you see clary sage, and you see the conifers. Well, right away, the question is going to come, how do these diverse different oils have antidepressant effects? Why is it that the conifers are antidepressant, and the bergamot is antidepressant, and the geranium, and the patchouli? How is it that all of these can have antidepressant effects? Well, the answer is relatively simple. Anything that smells good, that gives you a pleasurable sensation, is going to lift your mood. However, this is also accumulated through various sources where there is general agreement. Now, can I say that all essential oils have an antidepressant effect? If you enjoy the fragrance of everything you are smelling and it makes you happy, everything in aromatherapy is antidepressant. But on the other hand, there are going to be things that you're going to come across in aromatherapy teachings that are going to be much more oriented to specific mood-enhancing effects. And you're going to see studies confirming this. The citruses, for example, have a lot of studies indicating that they actually do have mood-uplifting effects. Jasmine, what about that? That's something we know historically. Jasmine is one of the most important ingredients in perfumes. Why do we wear perfumes? To feel better emotionally. That's one of the reasons. And so jasmine is historically known for centuries and centuries as an intoxicating floral fragrance that lifts the mood into a state of euphoria. Rose, famous for this also. So part of this particular category is just long historical use. I will give you my favorites out of this. I would say bergamot and the citrus is very, very important. Clary sage is a relaxant antidepressant, whereas the conifers and eucalyptus are an uplifting, mind-clearing kind of antidepressant. That's a different effect. Frankincense is an antidepressant because it's one of the sacred scents. Anything that has been used for a long time for ritual and ceremony has antidepressant mood-enhancing effects because it has a spiritual type of atmosphere that it creates. Flowers in general, like geranium, are antidepressant. Gingergrass is a stimulant to the brain, so it energizes us. And that also includes some of the warmer things here, like the laurel and the tulsi. Okay, those types of things are more antidepressant because they're more stimulant, whereas the flowers, lavender, rose, these are more antidepressant. Ylang ylang, these are antidepressant because they're more floral, euphoric types of feelings. Vanilla is a famous antidepressant because it's just yummy and delicious and reminds people of something delectable coming from the kitchen, and chocolate goes with that as well. So the fragrance of chocolate and vanilla, highly antidepressant for some people. And then one of My favorites here for antidepressant purposes would be vetiver. Okay, now I've just given you a long list of antidepressant oils. This is just the first draft. What are you going to do with them? Well, now we're going to move on to some blends, and then you can start to apply them. Are they helpful for women's conditions? Absolutely. Okay, antispasmodic. These are going to be things that are going to be related to menstrual cramps. We've all, you know, specifically, but also good for the muscles. Also good for headaches and neck and shoulder tension, wherever there's spasms. Also good for digestive spasms. Aphrodisiac. This is a new category. The fragrances that enhance and support sensual desires and erotic moods. Clary sage, very relaxing. The citruses are very mild in that way. Ginger is a warming stimulant to the circulation. Jasmine is probably number one. Jasmine is the most famous sultry, narcotic aphrodisiac that befuddles the mind. Neroli, orange blossom, very famous perfume ingredient. Most perfume ingredients are there because they have aphrodisiac functions. Aphrodisiac functions are also going to be antidepressant. They're also going to be relaxing, generally. So sandalwood, ylang ylang, a famous antidepressant, a famous relaxant, a famous aphrodisiac. Now we come to another category which is very problematic, and that's called hormone balancing. And the oils that I put here, clary sage, geranium, lavender, and rose. Now, why are there so few? Well, this is an area where there just is not a lot known yet, okay? And a lot of things are being said. But the whole concept of balancing hormones is a modern allopathic scientific model. It's not something you find in Ayurveda or Chinese medicine. They have a completely different language for seeing balance in the body. You balance the vata, pitta, kapha. You balance the yin, yang, and qi. You don't balance the estrogen and progesterone. And so this is a new field of research. People are making all kinds of claims. This oil is going to balance your hormones. This oil will balance your hormones. I don't know about that. What we can say is that if there are certain oils that do have hormone balancing effects for women, specifically for working through the pituitary, through the ovaries, through the thyroid, working specifically to balance the estrogen and progesterone, the oils that I would vote for having the highest likelihood of doing that would be clary sage, geranium, lavender, and rose. Now, does that mean those are the only oils that do it? No, absolutely not. But we're making a statement, hormone balancing. Now, what else balances your hormones? Well, a good night of sleep. And how about getting a good massage? How about feeling relaxed? How about mood upliftment and enhancement? How about a healthy diet? There are so many things that affect the hormone balance. And so therefore we can say that any other type of essential oil that is helping you to become balanced is undoubtedly an indirect influence on progesterone and estrogen as well. But when we say hormone balance, it refers very specifically to estrogen and progesterone, therapeutically and clinically. Let's look at the next group, Nervine Relaxant. Here are several oils that you've already met before and sedatives. These are also here as well. Now, I do not think that essential oils actually qualify a lot of times as being significant sedatives compared to herbs, okay? Medical cannabis is a sedative. It is a narcotic sedative, okay, that will glue you to the couch, as they say. That is a strong sedative. Hops, which is actually a member of the Cannabaceae family, it's a relative of cannabis. Hops is a strong sedative. Okay, passion flower, strong sedative. These are herbs that when you take them, you really feel sedated. essential oils will not do that. They will not make you feel sedated. They will have a mild sedative effect. And out of those, I would say the strongest is probably agarwood. Cistus is also very nice. Clary sage and jatamansi, those also come close. But the rest of these, they are very mild sedative oils. That concludes this file. Let's look at the next file, and this is where you can start to put all of this together and put together the major oils according to symptoms, and you can start to make some blends. You can start to do some treatments here, and that will be your homework assignment. Do something with these oils. Tell me something next week about the results that you are seeing. And so if we look at the next file, Women's Health Synergies and Formulas, you will see again the list of specific symptom oils. Dysmenorrhea. These again are oils where there is general agreement that these oils are helpful. And we have already done review of some studies. And so we know that things like ginger, taken as herb, and cinnamon, these are not listed here, but we know that those herbs can be helpful. And we know that lavender can be helpful. But if we look at the list, we see chamomile, why? Antispasmodic, cooling, relaxant. Citruses, why? Generally relaxant. Clary sage, strongly relaxant and most likely estrogen, progesterone balancing. Okay. Fennel, why do we say fennel? Fennel appears over and over again in lots of different female hormone balancing formulas. And it seems to be accumulated empirical knowledge that people are just observing in the world of aromatherapy that fennel oil is really effective for treating women's health concerns. And so fennel is a major oil for dysmenorrhea. Frankincense, also important, although I would say not a major oil. Geranium, very important. Strong floral oil for relaxing menstrual cramps. Jatamansi is a type of valerian, and the valerians are very, very sedative and relaxing. And so, jatamansi, a little bit of jatamansi and a carrier oil massaged on the abdomen can be very, very helpful for dysmenorrhea. Lavender, we already know that. Lemongrass, please be careful with lemongrass. It is dermotoxic. Use a very, very small amount, but it can also be helpful. Patchouli, some people really like it. Some people really don't like it. I wouldn't classify it as a major dysmenorrhea herb and oil, but it can be helpful. Peppermint, you already know my position about peppermint. It is a very strong essential oil. You must be careful with it, but it is significantly antispasmodic, and so it can be helpful. Tulsi, also very low concentration. And vetiver, I strongly recommend. I suspect that vetiver is really much more hormone balancing than people realize yet. I think that there's going to be a lot of studies coming out showing that vetiver is actually very, very good for estrogen progesterone balance. And then elong-elong, deeply relaxing. Next, amenorrhea. Period is not coming. That is frequently associated with depletion, overstimulation, long-term adrenal burnout, vata conditions, nutrient deficiency, and so forth. That's a big subject in itself. We can unpack it a little bit more next week and talk about a few herbs and some nutritional support. But the oils that are typically given, again, fennel, very famous oil for regulating the menstrual flow, clary sage. Again, I think this is an oil that's going to get a lot of attention as a balancer for the hormones. Geranium, ginger, a stimulant, warming jatamansi, a relaxant, and the citruses. Okay, PMS, I'll just give you the list real quickly here. Bergamot, chamomile, clary sage, fennel. You see a lot of the same oils over and over again. Now, what are you going to do with these? Abdominal massages. You already know the correct ratios to put in your carrier oil. Abdominal compresses for all of these, okay, dysmenorrhea, amenorrhea, and PMS. Abdominal compresses. Direct inhalation. Direct inhalation may be more applicable for something like PMS. It may be more effective just to have the diffuser going. You don't actually have to get an abdominal massage. The diffuser can be very helpful. Aromatic baths. Very nice way of using the essential oils for these three conditions specifically. Amenorrhea, dysmenorrhea, PMS. Aromatic baths, you already have all of the information about how to carefully dilute the essential oils so that you don't put 30 drops of thermotoxic oils and they're all floating on the bath and they get on your skin. Next, some blending proportions. This is based on the fragrance intensity and dermotoxic potential again. And what I have done, like I did last time, I took all the oils that are relevant for these conditions and I broke it down so now you can make your blends. And so let's say you want to treat PMS. You've got a list of these oils here. And let's say you are picking a couple oils. This will tell you, use 4 parts of bergamot, 2 parts of chamomile. That's from the fragrance intensity standpoint. Chamomile oil is much more concentrated. And then if you want to add something that's even a little stronger, you want to put 1 drop of patchouli with that, then you bring down the proportion accordingly. Again, the final category here, blending harmonies. What goes well with what? And this is to help us to start to get familiar with how these different oils harmonize together with different species. Okay, this is the end of that particular file. And now, if you could open one further file, we have two more things to go here very briefly. We'll carry some of this over, but we're actually covering a lot of the material today. So if you would open the file titled Women's Health References, Modules 1 through 9, I'm going to just introduce this file, and this is for you to review. These are essential oils that have been mentioned in previous modules that are all relevant to women's health issues. We will do this every week from here out because you will see, as we did last time, that there is an increasing number of oils that are relevant to every topic that we're going to be covering from here out. Therefore, in Module 3, you learned about bergamot. Well, you heard about bergamot several times in this module. And so if you go back to the bergamot monograph, you'll see that it is listed in the endocrine and reproductive category. And it says specifically that bergamot soothes menstrual pain. It supports the body during hormonal changes. It helps in PMS and menopause. It attenuates or lightens mood swings. Therefore, you can put bergamot in your diffuser. You can use bergamot in a number of different ways. You can look in the monograph. There's going to be some blends there. Now you understand from Module 3. Lavender was also in Module 3. Under endocrine and reproductive, it relieves mood swings related to PMS. We also saw the studies on that. Menopause and hormonal balances. It has emmenagogue properties, regulates menstruation. Emmenagogue properties means that it helps to bring the period on and regulate the menstrual cycle. Tea tree was also given. This is a specific clinical approach that was listed under endocrine and reproductive in that it helps in vaginal infections, treatment of leucorrhea. Now, that doesn't mean that you can go do a vaginal douche with tea tree oil. This is extremely dangerous. You are going to need to use extremely diluted amounts, all right? Now, we haven't covered how to do that, so please don't experiment, but I gave it as one of the uses. A simple solution, if you want. Tea tree hydrosol is much more biocompatible with mucous membranes, and even that, you would like to dilute further. Let's talk about this one next week when we talk about treatment of further health concerns. Okay, modules 4 and 5. You saw that the Monarda oil, this was in the respiratory modules, but the Monarda oil also was listed in the endocrine and reproductive category for soothing menstrual pain, supporting the body during hormonal changes, and reducing mood swings. Then, in the digestive modules, 6 and 7, we see black pepper listed for the endocrine and reproductive system for soothing menstrual pain. So black pepper can be added then to the formulas for relaxing menstrual cramps. And black pepper has aphrodisiac effects also. Cardamom enhances libido and is aphrodisiac and soothing to menstrual pain. Chamomile is very important. It has been listed several times already in the new files. And if you go back, you'll see that there's a women's menstrual blend. 2 drops fennel. There's the fennel again. 2 drops clary sage. There's the clary sage again. Rose. There it is again. And bergamot. 3 drops. And neroli. These will start to become very, very familiar. You're going to hear these things over and over again, and you'll start to see lavender, clary sage, clary sage, lavender, fennel, clary sage, fennel, lavender. These things start to become very redundant, actually, very easy to understand. There's a limited amount of information there, but an infinite number of ways we can put it together. Module 8, grapefruit. The citruses in general are all very good for women's health, because they're mood uplifting and relaxing. But in the endocrine and reproductive, we see that the grapefruit, soothing to menstrual pain, relieving to the mood swings. And we can say that about all the citruses in general. And then finally, we see lemon balm, endocrine and reproductive, balances the hormones, regulates the menstruation and ovulation, helps in PMS and menopause. Okay, so that completes that particular file. And we have run out of time. Miraculously, it happened so quickly. There's one further file that we didn't cover. Those are the monographs. And so I will leave this for you for next week. We have 2 modules dedicated to this topic, so we have plenty of time to cover even more. So please read these monographs. We'll start with these next week, and you will see that you have 4 very important flower oils. I have describe to you why the flowers are used so extensively for women's health, the link with the limbic system, which controls our biorhythms, and the biorhythmic pulsation of the flowers that produce the essential oils. All right, that concludes our time, but let's have a little conversation. And so I'll go ahead and open it up, and let's see if anybody like to post anything on the webcast, or if anybody would like to call in and discuss this particular topic. If anybody has any questions, any comments, if anybody has any wonderful testimonials about anything we have talked about, or if you thought of anything since we started the class. So Colleen, I'll turn it back to you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, David. Just to remind everyone, press 1 on your telephone keypad to share. And otherwise, if you're on the webcast, please type in directly. And we have a caller. I'll give you the mic. And Regina, go ahead, please.
Hi. I have a quick question that you may have answered before, and if so, please forgive me. But I'm a little bit confused as to the clarification as to what oils blend well with others. Does that relate to the scents that blend well together, or that these compounds within the essential oils actually work well in synergy together, regardless of the scent they create?
Well, I have mentioned this a couple of times before, and I'll just clarify it again. There are 2 basic principles with blending, and this is not just with essential oils, but it's also with the carrier oils. One is the therapeutic goal, and the other is the olfactory goal. So with carrier oils, a lot of the carrier oils have a very strong scent. And if you put a very refined essential oil into it, you may lose it. Like, for example, tamanu oil is very thick and green and heavy and smells very vegetative and so forth. And you might think, well, the combination of tamanu and rose oil will be really great therapeutically. Well, it will be really great therapeutically, but unfortunately, you will not be able to smell your rose oil that you spent so much money on. Mm-hmm. So therefore, you must think about, do you want the therapeutic benefit primarily, or do you want the olfactory benefit? Now, of course, this depends how you are using the oil. And so if you're using a Tamanu oil combination specifically for a skin problem, and the fragrance doesn't have to be that important, then you don't have to worry about the olfactory effects as much as putting the oils together so that you get maximum therapeutic benefit on the skin. However, for the olfactory results, we want to think about a high quality blend that smells really good, because that will be the primary therapeutic mechanism. And so therefore, we have to break it down and say, well, do we want an oil that's really medicinal, that is working through other routes other than the olfactory route, or do we want an oil that basically smells really nice, that's going to have a really good effect through our limbic system? Okay, so that's how we've discussed it in the past. And so you can do the blending of the essential oils from that particular perspective as well. It's not just with the carrier oils, it's also with all essential oils. And I have also given some principles of blending. And let me see if I can pull up that file and tell you where that was very quickly. It might take me a little while to find it. It was in one of the files of the webcast questions a couple weeks ago. And I may have to go back and reiterate that, but basically what somebody was asking, I am making blends and sometimes they don't come out so nice. And so if you look at that file, I gave a series of steps. Start with two oils only. They have to sit for a little while to blend together, you know, and so forth. If you review that, that will start to give you some good principles of discovering what smells good together. And then if you follow these harmonies that are given with each of these oils in the monographs, this will give you a lot more information as a starting point. And so, for example, in the file today, let me just pull that up here real quickly.
David, I don't mean to interrupt, but my question is more, what was your intent when you put blends well together? Do you mean olfactory-wise or therapeutic-wise?
Well, as I said, it could be either one. Okay.
But ultimately,
we're concerned about the therapeutic benefit. But what I am clarifying here is that the therapeutic benefit does not necessarily come from the olfactory sense. Okay, and so what I was trying to explain is that sometimes the therapeutic benefit comes primarily because the blend smells really nice. Sometimes the therapeutic benefit comes because of other reasons. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Is that clear? Are you understanding
yes,
the concept?
Yes, but I'm still kind of stuck on when you list, like, lavender blends well with, say, rose or whatever. Obviously, that works well from a scent perspective, but
exactly.
I'm wondering if you mean that it also blends well because they contain chemical constituents that work well in synergy together, regardless of the scent.
Oh, I see. No, the starting point would be they blend well together from the olfactory standpoint.
Oh, okay. Great, okay.
In other words, those smell nice together.
Oh,
But your question can also be answered from the other side of it, which is that if they're blending well together, then consider what the oils are. And if those two oils or three oils blend well together from the olfactory standpoint, and those are oils that you want for a specific therapeutic benefit, they will also create a therapeutic synergy.
Oh, okay. So you mean actually from both standpoints?
Exactly.
Oh,
okay.
Fabulous. Thank you
all
for
right,
clarifying.
All right, okay, good. Oh, okay, well, I didn't understand your question completely at first.
I know, I'm sorry about that.
No, that's fine. It was a good review. But now that you restated it and I understood it more clearly, it is both. Okay, they go together well from the olfactory standpoint, and if those oils are ones that you want, like for example, lavender and clary sage, they go together nicely from the olfactory standpoint, but they also go together very nicely from the therapeutic standpoint.
Okay?
And so you're going to see certain combinations of two and three oils that are going to be repeated over and over and over again. Now keep in mind that it's not just the combination, it's also the ratios. So for example, if you bring in lavender and clary sage and fennel, you could have so much fennel in it that the lavender and clary sage just disappear. You see, so you also have to think about the fragrance intensity. And that's why I'm introducing this a step at a time and giving you all the pieces here. But once you start to connect the dots and look at how things blend harmoniously from the olfactory standpoint, look at the recipes of how things blend from the therapeutic standpoint, and then look at the ratios of how you would like to use one part of this one versus four parts of this one, then it starts to make more sense. And don't forget, if that's too complicated, just go to the monographs, and there's lots of good recipes, okay? And I'm also giving good recipes as we go a step at a time, just, you know, that you can find in the transcripts. So, good question. Thank you for clarifying it.
Oh, thank you so much for clarifying for me as well. Now I get a better understanding of what you mean by blends well with.
Okay, good.
And I appreciate
good.
That. Thanks.
Okay, good. And I encourage everybody to please ask any question that you have any confusion or lack of clarity about. This is what our interaction time is for. Okay, so Colleen, anybody else calling in, or shall we just go ahead and wrap things up?
We have another caller. And I also just wanted to share, just in regards to the last question, it was in Module 7 on the webcast file that you talked about blending.
Good, thank you.
Yeah,
thank
just you. For others' reference. And we have Arpita with a question. Go ahead, Arpita. You have the mic.
Hello, thank you. So, David, you were talking about helichrysum earlier, and you said that it improves capillary circulation where it is blocked. And so that is making me wonder if you've heard anything about helichrysum being effective for people with Raynaud's syndrome.
Yes, in the French aromatherapy, it is considered one of the primary oils for Raynaud's.
Great.
All yes, right. It is a circulatory enhancer. Now, it's interesting because it's a cooling oil, okay? And so you could also consider that the warming oils are also a good choice in something like ginger in a very low concentration, high dilution, might also be nice, but the helichrysum is going to work at a different level. Helichrysum is going to work more supporting the arterial and venous system, and specifically the capillary circulation. And so for that, in French aromatherapy, they advise using helichrysum diluted in a carrier oil, massaged on the feet or hands on a regular basis.
Great. Thank you.
You are most welcome. Okay, well, unfortunately, our time is over. And I'll just say thank you to everybody again for your sincere interest in this subject. And feel free to go ahead and post further questions and comments on the webcast during the week for those of you who are joining us later. And for those of you who are present on the call, I'll go ahead and invite you again to join the breakout groups where you can discuss these subjects further with your fellow students. And don't forget to do a little homework here, and that is to read the monographs in preparation for next week. And also, for those of you who have your oils, to enjoy them and to practice blending and to explore the recipes and formulas and blends that we have been discussing. Make things for yourself. And since we are doing all of this in a very safe way, make them for your friends and family and use them safely and enjoy the benefits and have a wonderful week. I'll talk to everybody next week. And Colleen, I will turn it back to you. And thank you so much for being on the call again, as always.
Thank you so much, too, David, for leading us and sharing all of this wonderful wisdom. It was a great evening. And so we will see you in between class on the Course Community Group. And until next week, have a wonderful evening from us here at the Shift Network.